The recordings have started.
Great. Thank you so much. Good morning, good afternoon, and good evening. Welcome to the RPM TMCH subteam working group call on the 26th of August at 1500 UTC. On the call today, we have Jeff Newman, Faiz Agarwal, Phil Corwin, Kathy Kleiman, Christine Durain, Susan Payne, Marina Lois. We do have apologies from Kurt Pritz and Grace Matongo. From staff, we have Barry Cobb, David Tate, and myself, Michelle D. Snyder. I'd like to remind you all to please state your name before speaking for transcription purposes. I'll turn the call to you, David.
Thanks, Michelle. And I'll just also note that we've got apologies from Mary Wong, who unfortunately isn't able to join us for this call. As you'll see from the agenda on the right-hand side, and hopefully from the emails that have been circulated, we've added at the last minute, and many thanks to Kathy for the prompting, additional item, which is discussion, which is agenda item one, which is to conclude the discussion regarding possible information to be sought from donuts and other DPML-like providers. That issue was an action item from last week's meeting, and it was for the working group to, apologies for the subteam, to take some time and consider how best to proceed with this, as there had been it hadn't necessarily been possible to reach consensus on the best route to proceed forward. So I propose to reopen the discussion at that point and ask if any of the sub-team members would like to raise their hands in the room and kick off a discussion on how we should proceed in relation to this item. Can I check that everyone's able to hear me? Hi, Kathy. You've got your hand
up. Hi, David. So we're talking about the DPML. And can you provide, was there anything that you found when you were looking for more information about any type of private use of the trademark clearinghouse? There's both donuts, mines, and machines. There are others. Can you tell us a little bit about what you and Mary were able to do and what you found? Because it's different, you know, if you're hitting a wall or if you didn't have time or something like that. So if you could give a little bit longer of an update, that may give us a sense of where we might go from here. Thanks.
Thanks for that, Kathy. Just to my understanding is that Mary had done a very cursory or a very preliminary search, perhaps better way to put it, for any publicly available information, and we hadn't been able to come up with anything other than the single link to the donuts page, which we shared last week. So we haven't, as far as I'm aware, we haven't been able to discern any more in-depth information to be publicly available.
Great. Thanks, David. I'm going to take my hand down and I'll enter the queue after Susan again. Thanks.
Susan, if you'd like to keep. Kathy, since Susan's put her hand down, would you like to speak?
Sure. Do we want to put some questions together for donuts and mines and machines and anyone else who we know might have a protected marks list? Some initial questions for data gathering purposes, add them to the list that we're currently looking at. How do other people feel about that? see a lot of people typing.
Christine, would you like to interject?
Yeah, I was one of those people typing. Sorry, this is Christine from Amazon, and then I realized this is such a small list, I should just raise my hand. Yeah, I agree, Kathy. I think that's sort of what we, I think that's exactly what we meant to do. I admit to not doing my homework and giving this a ton of thought during the course of the week. But I think absolutely, I think one of the things we should be doing today is to kind of come up with the list and then vet that list, right? So I might have 15 questions, I don't, but let's say I did. But maybe only five of them are really sort of relevant to the RPMs portion of the working group. Like, you know, I may have other questions about how DPML works that aren't related to the working group. So I think one of the things we should do is, I'm a fan of the approach of sort of brainstorming questions and then kind of backtracking and deciding after the fact, okay, now are these actually, you know, kind of related to our purpose, or, you know, do they go off on a tangent? So I would propose that as a way forward of just sort of shouting out, you know, questions that people might have. And one of the questions I have, which maybe does just go to the operation of DPML, and may, again, may or may not actually apply, is did it looks like from the DPML FAQ that a trademark clearinghouse SMD file was required. I would be interested to find out what sort of response Donuts got to that, as far as, did they get any pushback from people who wanted to participate in DPML but were not members of the Trademark Clearinghouse and who didn't want to be, you know, didn't want to put their marks in the Trademark Clearinghouse but would have liked to participate in DPML otherwise? I'm not entirely sure why I want to know that, but I think that would be interesting. So now I'll jump out of the queue and let somebody else ask their questions.
And to expand from what Christine said, this is Kathy, are there marks in the DPML that aren't in the Trademark Clearinghouse? I think the answer is no, but it's it would be a good question to ask. Thanks.
Hi, it's Susan. The answer to that one is no. For all of the DPML services, you had to have a mark in the TMCH. So there shouldn't be any blocks that aren't matched by a mark in the PMCH, as you suspected. And then I was just going to mention what I found, what I just put in the chat, which is the CCPRT look as though they're also kind of gathering data, and they were endeavoring to gather data on numbers of blocks and haven't been able to find any commercially available data on that. So although I've included a link to a page where they're talking about it. In fact, what they say is they haven't found any.
Thank you, Susan. Marina, you've got your hand up.
Thanks, everyone. Sorry, I haven't had enough coffee yet this morning in California. I couldn't find the mute button. I just wanted to follow up on Christine's comments and, to that extent, Kathy's as well, about DPML, because, you know, I know that I sort of had this sinking suspicion as to why I want to have all this information from them, but maybe I couldn't quite put my finger on it. And just one of the things I've been sort of thinking about at Donuts and DPML, and again, not to be the voice of gripiness or grouchiness or cynicism so early in the morning, but one of the issues I've had with DPML from the get-go is that and perhaps I should frame this in terms of how we create our questions and the information that we seek to obtain from them, and that we do so in a way that is designed to eliminate bias. And the reason I say that is simply because I made some comments on our last call. Donuts and DPML, I think, have a very vested interest in the existence and the operation of the Trademark Clearinghouse for purposes of running their own protected marks list. And as the question came up about whether or not marks are in the DPML but not in Trademark Clearinghouse, and from my understanding, it's because, technically speaking, DPML gets all the SMD files from Trademark Clearinghouse, and so that's why they need you to have membership in Trademark Clearinghouse before they can actually open up a blocking membership. And I suspect that has a lot more to do with the technical requirements of actually being able to enter all this information. And if they can get it from Trademark Clearinghouse, then, you know, again, I'll just say it. I think that probably saves Donuts an incredible amount of money and makes this whole operation viable. So, again, if we're trying to determine whether or not the Trademark Clearinghouse is a valuable solution for brand owners or, you know, something for, you know, to serve the needs of the public, if we're going to be asking these questions of donuts and of their DPML, and Whiteside Registry, I believe, is the other one that has a DPML, again, I think we need to be very concerned about the possibility of bias in the answers that we get back from them. And so if we could keep that in mind in crafting our questions, I think that that might help us to get as objective data as we can. Because, again, I don't want to point donuts out to be the bad guy either, but recognizing that they do have a financial stake in the existence and the operation of the Trademark Clearinghouse could help us to guide our questions to arrive at a more objective conclusion, which is what I think we want here. So just my initial thoughts in the morning here.
Thanks, Marina. At this point, is there any other comments or questions to be proposed? Oh, Christine, you've got.
Hi, Christine from Amazon. I'm interested in Susan's comment that it was anecdotal, but Comlaude certainly had clients where that was the case. And the reason why I'm interested in that, and it kind of goes to the question that I had asked about, did the various DPML services drive users to the Trademark Clearinghouse? Because, again, trying my best to be mindful of our purpose, right, and not just investigate DPML to investigate DPML, we want to find out about the effectiveness of the Trademark Clearinghouse as a rights protection mechanism. So, if, in fact, the Trademark Clearinghouse was basically set up for Sunrise and claim services, but these other sort of free market, you know, forces created additional uses for Trademark Clearinghouse SMD files that furthered rights protection, if brand owners found some sort of value and actually participated in the Trademark Clearinghouse because of these additional services that were offered, I think we need to loop that into our data to present to the entire working group because, excuse me, because I think that really speaks to ways that we can encourage the Trademark Clearinghouse or if potential problems are identified, we could, you know, encourage the Trademark Clearinghouse to, or encourage third parties to adopt similar uses of the Trademark Clearinghouse that would additionally protect trademark rights. So I think that it's really an interesting dynamic as we think about how the Trademark Clearinghouse has benefited brand owners and served the purpose it was intended to serve, right, of protecting trademarks and how the sort of free market has latched onto it as well and expanded that. So I think that's really fascinating, and I'd like to explore that a little more.
Kathy.
Hi. And following up to what Christine said, on the flip side, what was created for the new GTLDs was a balance, both protecting trademark owners but also protecting registrant rights to use legitimate words in legitimate ways. So is the extension of the Trademark Clearinghouse somehow adding to the chilling effect, perhaps? Is it going beyond the balance that was carefully crafted by the STI when the GNSO recommended these mechanisms to both the GNSO and the ICANN community and the board? So I think we have to look at it from both sides and think about it in both ways. So, you know, both, yeah. So I think we're going to see questions reflecting. I think there are a lot of questions about these the protected marks list. So I look forward to putting them all together. I like the idea of circulating them, sitting on them for a week, refining them so that they don't reflect bias, and then sending them out. I think this is an important inquiry. Thanks.
Kathy, thanks for that. And just before, I'll just note that Jeff Newman has asked if you could possibly repeat your query so that we can clarify for the the list of questions before it goes out exactly what we're hoping to get from that?
Sure. We have to look at the private uses of the Trademark Clearinghouse from all perspectives. And one of the questions we were asked in our charter was, you know, is there a chilling effect? So I think that question applies to the sunrise period. It applies to the trademark notices. And if we're looking at the private uses of the Trademark Clearinghouse, it would apply here as well. Thanks.
Thank you, Kathy, and I'd like to ask it.
Right. Thank you, David, for the opportunity. For the record, Vaibhav Agarwal is my name. And good evening, everyone. I just want to add here, just let me not advance on the thoughts from where we are and take a minute and take you guys back in my thought. And my question or my observation that I'm sharing could be a little below the mark as well, but then I would still like to share that. And it's food for thought. My question is, first, now that the first round of new GTLDs are over and we're looking at the second round, there is a lot of learning that is already there in the system. As Kathy mentioned, the purpose was to protect the brand as well as enable the registrant to manage an expectation from the legitimate perspective. Legitimacy has to be protected. Now, I also have an observation here that one of the extensions in the new GTLD program is actually withholding those brands, for example, for the sake of TMCH clearing and so on and so forth. And what they're actually doing is they're actually pushing the prices up. So once the query comes in from the brand and the paperwork starts processing, the pricing gets held on to. And then what happens? So if there is, let's say, a $10 pricing on a particular extension, that registry goes ahead and takes it up to, let's say, 100 straight away. And then, you know, and they take 3 months down the line to give it an okay, and the client has to take it. So the registrant is not protected. Can we not strike a balanced approach in terms of reviewing and data collection? And we can think about this. And I'm going to share this. I'm going to share a thought. One of the ways that we could perhaps do it. So one of the ways we could perhaps do it is look at the regional efficacy of the entire process. We could divide the entire globe into certain zones. We already have countrywide data that is being there. And why don't we get a TMCH representative region-wide? So let's say one representative sits in Singapore who could assist in queries, and you know, there should be a process not just dependent on the registrars, but there should be a process dependent on TMCH or DPML as a body. Because the moment we leave that to either the registrars or the registry itself, I think somewhere there is a conflict of interest in the overall activity that is being performed by the individual registry or the registrar. And I'm not trying to say that it's definitely there. I'm definitely discounting it. But I think there should be a regional aspect to the entire exercise. And the scope of both DPML and TMCH integration into the system should actually get expanded. Thank you.
Thank you. And Jeff, you've got your hand up next.
Yeah, thanks. I want to go back to something that Kathy said, because I'm still trying to grapple or get my head around a notion of a chilling effect. I believe the chilling effect was only in relation to the claims service, and that was whether the claims notice is scaring potential legitimate registrants away from registering names. But I don't really understand the notion of a chilling effect with Sunrise or DPML, because by definition, Sunrise chills everybody else because only the trademark owner can have the mark. And so there's no chilling effect on a potential registrant, because the only one allowed to register it is the trademark owner. So there's no nothing. I don't understand it. And then the DPML is the same way. It prevents anyone from getting or registering the mark. So Kathy, if you could just, again, I'm just confused as to what you mean by collecting information on a chilling effect from the DPML. I just don't know what information that would be. Thanks.
Okay. We could revisit. Phil, do you want to jump in, or do you want me to respond to Jeff?
Yeah, Kathy, you go first, and I'll jump in.
Okay. Obviously, the chilling effect is not what we're investigating. We're looking for data. That's all we're doing here is we're looking for data, and now we've expanded our scope to look for data that's a little bit more under the surface than what's publicly available. So we have every right, one thinks, and this is what we concluded in our last meeting, to talk about the DPML and similar types of constructs that are privately using the TMCH. We can go back to some of the arguments about the protected marks list, which was roundly rejected by the STI. But basically, the overall question is, are registrants being kept from registering domain names to which they would otherwise be entitled? Are they being kept from registering domain names that are legal? And that, you know, to me is one of the key underlying questions that we're looking at in conjunction with the Trademark Clearinghouse. So we're just collecting data. And I like some of the ideas that were presented earlier about regional representation, that we have to look at this from the perspective of different regions. Trademarks are geographic. And so I think that was an excellent suggestion that we got. And look forward to continuing the discussion. Thanks.
This is Jeff. Can I just respond to that one before we go on to other comments?
It's Phil, Jeff. Go ahead.
Okay, thanks, Phil. Kathy, I have no objection to collecting data, but I'm just saying, by its very nature, I think the answer to your question is yes, and for both Sunrise and for DPML, potential legitimate registrants are being withheld from registering names which they might otherwise, under trademark law or any other law, have a right to. That's the very nature of the service itself, right? The nature of the service is, if I register in Sunrise, then I can prevent everyone else from registering that mark, even if they would in some way, shape, or form have a right to use it. So I'm not sure what data you're asking to collect. Like, what do you, I don't understand who you ask and what you ask, but the answer has to be for those two, yes, and that was the point of those services, is to, for Sunrise, to give the trademark owner, a trademark owner, and it can only be one trademark owner, the right to register first. And by definition, the right to register first prevents everyone else in the world from registering that name. So is there anyone else in the world that has a legitimate right to that name? Absolutely. But the first one in and the first one that's a trademark owner gets it. Same thing with the DPML, which by its very nature is meant to block everyone else in the world from using it. So, Kathy, I'm not sure what data or what we're asking, what you would ask or what kind of data you want to collect. I'm just a little confused. Thanks.
Kathy, Phil.
Phil, I'm going to wait for Phil on this, and I know there were other people in the queue as well, so I'm happy to take my hand down and listen to the discussion for a little bit.
Okay. Hey, thanks. Phil here. I want to speak a little more broadly, just kind of blue sky this for the broader work of the working group. On the questions themselves, I'm generally okay with them. I'm thinking about whether there's another one we could ask the registries related to these blocking services. I don't have one readily available. I'll weigh in if I come up with them. I think some of the questions that Kurt Pritz suggested in the email we got just before this, and some of his comments were useful. I want to make an observation. It's probably more for the full group, but at least raise it here. It seems to me, as Kathy noted, the idea of a blocking service was discussed by the STI and rejected. Now, and these are just personal views, we have the curious situation where the TMCH has, in fact, become the gatekeeper for these blocking services. You must register each mark in the TMCH to have it blocked, and that at least that assures a certain quality of trademark and actual use to get the blocking. But we've rejected a universal blocking mechanism at all new TLDs and created, and there's nothing wrong with it within the context of what's been done, a number of proprietary blocking services by different registries, the result of which is that for trademark owners, you've got a blocking system which is more expensive probably than a universal one would have been, and it's also incomplete. And then you have, as Kathy noted, not just unique trademarks blocked like Microsoft, Google, iPhone, but generic words blocked from registration across not just TLDs where there might be high potential for infringement, but TLDs where the probability of their registration and use would be very low risk of infringement for words like Apple and Windows. So I just wanted to – I think the questions are fine, but in the overall context of the results of deciding not to have a universal blocking service and the creation of multiple proprietary blocking services, it seems to me that we've created a situation which is while it does create, and it's a perfectly legitimate profit avenue for registries in the current context, it's a less than optimal situation for both trademark owners and potential registrants. And I just wanted to get that thought out there. It's beyond the scope of what we're discussing here on questions, but I think it's just something I think is interesting and may wish to bring it up in the broader group when we get into the TMCH. And I'll stop there. Thank you.
Thanks, Phil. Jeff, you were next.
Yeah, two things. First, I want to be clear for the record that the STI group did not reject a universal blocking service. What it rejected was the notion by the IRT of a famous marks list. Very different, although some similar aspects. Obviously, if there were marks that were on the famous marks list, then they would be blocked. But the STI group did not spend any real time on discussing a universal block list. And to the extent it may have come up was in the nature of discussing XXX. And I believe during those discussions, and I can't remember if XXX had formally launched yet by that time of their block service or whether it was just discussed. But I believe people said it was fine if individual registries wanted to run their own blocking service like XXX was doing, but that we didn't have enough data to determine whether we could do one on a universal approach. So I just want to be clear. We definitely rejected at the time in the STI the famous marks list, which is different than the blocking service. So I don't want it till and Kathy, just to be on the record, that we, the STI, had rejected the blocking service. As far as questions for Donuts, obviously I want the data on how many people have used it, the renewal rates of the block list. But in some way, and I put this in the chat, I'd love to know how many people used the trademark clearinghouse solely for the purpose of participating in a DPML service that didn't otherwise participate in a Sunrise. In other words, the thinking there is, you know, were there any users of the DPML that would not have
put their marks into the clearinghouse had it not been for a DPML type service? Do they think a Sunrise and claims were just insufficient by itself, but because Donuts had come up with this idea of a block list, did they then say, okay, now I'm going to put my mark into the clearinghouse? Hope that makes sense. I'm not sure exactly how to ask that question, but that's something I would like. I think it would be very useful data. Thanks.
Thanks, Jeff. Kathy, you've got your hand up.
Sure, thanks.
To wrap this up, though, within just noting that obviously we've got to look at the next list of questions for next week, and we've spent approximately 30 minutes on this topic so far. So I'd ask that after Kathy and Susan, we could wrap discussion here.
Okay. I think Jeff raises a really good question. I don't know whether Donuts is going to have that data. Okay. So, Christine, thanks for pointing me to the right-hand side of the agenda. So let's look down. Oh, and to Jeff's question, I have a whole different memory of the SDI and what led up to it in Sydney, Australia. There was avid rejection of a protected marks list. But be that as it may, we can go back into ancient history. We have what we have. So for the list of proposed questions for Donuts et al., I think we're talking about Donuts, Right Side, Minds, and Machines, and maybe a question for every registry, but I'll get to it in a second. That means when we look at the proposed questions, I don't think we can call them a DPML, because that's the Donuts Protective Mark List. So let's call it, let's define a new term, unless anybody objects, which is the PML, a Protected Mark List, or a PPML, a Private Protected Marks List, because I don't know what Right Side calls theirs. I don't know what Minds and Machines calls theirs. I don't know if they work with Donuts on it. You know, let's see if we can get basic questions, which is how do you structure your PML? How many marks are in it? Are these descriptive marks? Can you tell us how many of the marks, similar questions to what we're going to be asking in TMCH, are, you know, basic dictionary words, are basic descriptive marks, are basic geographic terms? Versus how many of them are, you know, a different question would be how many of the marks in your PML would you generally consider coined and fanciful terms? Just kind of basic questions that I would recommend we put in. I also have a lot of questions. So to the registries, now the list of questions we have for registries, I think we'd ask a question and help me find more neutral phrasing, but are you using the TMCH in a private way for additional purposes other than Sunrise and trademark claims? That way we may find out that there are other types of services being used because, as Jeff pointed out last week, as others have pointed out, there's very little information public about this, but this is our job to kind of dig it up. And per David's question, David, I've got a lot to add to some of the other questions once, not a lot, but, you know, things here and there, once we leave this topic, so I'll stay in the queue. Thanks.
Thanks, Kathy. Susan.
Yeah, I put my hand up when someone, I think it was Jeff, was talking about what would be good to see in terms of did people use the DPML when they perhaps didn't use a TMCH for other purposes, you know, so was the driver in putting marks in the TMCH? And I, you know, as I said in the chat earlier, anecdotally, I definitely, you know, I know of it, you know, some clients of Cum Laude who say that that's the case, but I don't think that Donuts are going to have that information. And Donuts can obviously tell us about how many blocks people have purchased, but I don't think they're going to be able to tell us whether those people also purchased something somewhere else. So I would sort of put my hand up to say, can we kind of brainstorm who we ask that question to, or how do we try and get that data? Because I don't think that data, sadly, is going to come certainly on its own from Donuts. And then I just wanted to comment quickly on something that Kathy was saying, and I may have been misunderstanding it, but it seemed to me that we were going to be that what Kathy was talking about was sort of asking questions of Donuts and others about how they run their block, which perhaps could be answered by us reading their rules, and I'm may well be have been misunderstanding what you were saying, Kathy. So I was more kind of wanting to seek some clarification. But I think we need to be careful to have read their rules first before we just go and ask them a load of questions, which, you know, the more questions we ask them, the harder, the less likely they are going to be about, you know, enthusiastically responding.
Thank you, Susan. Kristen, you've got your hand up for one last comment before we move.
Yeah, sorry, before we move on. I just wanted to a little bit respond to Susan's concern that maybe we wouldn't be able to get some of the information we're looking for. And I'm going to throw out a proposal that for the moment, we not limit ourselves to what we think we can get. I propose, and the group can soundly reject this, but I'm going to propose that we ask for this, that we put just, you know, brainstorm, because questions feed off of one another, and if we start policing our questions before we're done questioning, you know, I think we might artificially lose some. So I would propose that we create a really, you know, a far-reaching list that just all the stuff we ever wanted to know, and then go back through and call and decide, yeah, there's no way we could get that, or here's where we might get that, or here's how we might be able to get that. I'm just going to throw that out as a suggestion. I would hate to see our conversation, I guess, you know, damped down a little bit by trying to second-guess whether or not the information that we want is available.
Thanks, Christine. And on a following on from that, and just on a last comment that really is from a staff perspective, one of the things that was discussed last week was the possibility of asking Donuts or a similar PPNL provider to meet with the sub-team and to perhaps provide some answers to some of these questions directly. Obviously, the list of questions that we're drafting at the moment, and which we'll finalise hopefully next week, staff are, of course, happy to transmit that directly to Donuts and the other providers we've been discussing. But the principle of inviting them to come and speak either to a meeting of the sub-team or to the full working group, depending on what you feel is appropriate, is also something that's there and would... you'd be obviously very keen to get your guidance as to whether or not you would like us to extend that invitation when we send these questions along at the same time.
David, this is Kathy. Can we move on to some of the other questions?
Kathy, thanks. Thing? Yes.
Okay.
Yes, absolutely.
Okay.
So moving on to...
Sorry, go ahead.
So I was just going to say that we have a document. Kurt, who unfortunately isn't with us, but has kindly circulated some immediate comment. So I think, as you see with the document, what we did was consolidate a lot of the comments and questions that were raised last week into this document. Recognising the steer that we'd already had from the working group, that in order to avoid bombarding each of the respondents with one-off questions, we should consolidate all of them into a single approach. That's what we've done with this document. So it has been expanded even since last week, and you'll see Kurt's comments there. So, Kathy, if you'd like to kick us off with your comments.
Yeah, and I haven't had a chance to look at Kurt's comments. First, let me check procedure, David. Is this going, is the subgroup going to circulate these to the co-chairs? Is it going to request that these go directly out to the registries, registrars, Donuts, right side? I mean, what's the procedure we agreed on? Just want to double check. And then I'll go through some additional questions. Go ahead. Thanks,
Kathy. It's my understanding that they would go up to the co-chairs and to sign off, and then at that point they would be transmitted.
Okay. Sounds great. So, again, without reference to Kurt's comments, which came in just before the meeting started, let me try adding a few. I'm going to go down the list if you guys don't mind, because I'm going to have to leave early to take a kid somewhere. So questions for the new GTLD registries. I think we have it on the right side, but just in case not, are you using the Trademark Clearinghouse for purposes other than Sunrise and trademark claims? For both registries and registrars, let me try this one. And you're welcome to put this in red line so that people can see that it's a new idea and object or edit or anything like that. Why do you think so many registrants are turning back when they receive trademark notices? And this is something that came up in our outreach session, and Brett Fawcett came up to us kind of very upset about this from Uniregistry. So I would do that to both registries and registrars because they may be seeing it at different levels. Why do you think so many registrants are turning back when they receive trademark claims notice? For the providers, and I apologize if it's in there and I didn't see it, but last time we talked about two questions in terms of education and outreach. So let me give you both of them. Or at least as I understood that we were talking about. How much time and money did you spend, and I know you may want to edit the word money, but how much time, money, resources did you spend on educating trademark owners about the sunrise period and the trademark notices? In light of the comment that we got earlier today from Vibhav, I'm sorry, I'm mispronouncing your name, in what regions were these outreach sessions held? Might be a good one. And we may find they were all online, but I don't think so. I know there was regional outreach. Same question for registrants now. How much time, money, resources did you spend educating domain name registrants about the sunrise period and trademark notice, trademark claims notice? And then second, kind of, and in what regions and in what languages? One question I know that's being raised in various places, also for the provider, the Trademark Clearinghouse providers, how many design marks have you registered? And then a separate question, what is your criteria for registering a design mark? And can you give a concrete example? And they can give that example with or without a specific mark that's in there. But there's a lot of questions that have been raised in certain communities about the design marks. So I think we should pursue that. And I don't think we have a category yet for questions for registrants or user groups or customers. And so I think we should think about a new category of questions as well for, you know, again, the balance. And that probably have a lot to do with, you know, how much do you understand of the purpose of the Trademark Clearinghouse and sunrise periods, et cetera. Thanks. That was a lot. Thanks for keeping track. I can also type it up if you need it. I will take my hand down. Susan, go ahead.
Sorry, Susan, just before you kick off, Kathy. Yeah, I tried to get all of that down, but you were going quite quickly, so if I could ask you just to drop those questions over in an email to me when you have a moment so I can make sure they're included in the entire.
Hi, it's Susan. I was just typing that in the chat at the same time as I put my hand up, but the answer to that, the design mark answer is in the TMCH guidelines. So I think it's a good thing to capture this, you know, in the spirit of what we talked about and what Christine in particular talked about earlier in terms of, you know, let's capture it as a question and not self-police. But we should definitely be, you know, if the answer is there, we should not be actually asking the provider that question unless the answer isn't clear enough, if you know what I mean. So I'm not saying we take this out. I think, as talked about earlier, we shouldn't be policing at this stage, but we do need to be, you know, if the information is there and very readily available, we shouldn't be asking the providers to find this information for us.
Kathy, you put your hands up.
Actually, I'm not sure we know how many design marks are in the Trademark Clearinghouse, and it seems consistent with a number of the other types of questions we're asking, descriptive marks.
Sorry, I meant the criteria bit. I'm not sure if we do know. You're correct. I'm not sure if we do know the numbers, but the criteria bit.
Uh-huh. But the criteria is still pretty broad, so how it's being applied, how they're differentiating between design marks and kind of what's in and what's out and where the gray areas are, I know is of great interest to some. Thanks.
So just returning to the document, and I'll just go through the comments that Kurt has made, unless there's any objection, in relation to question one, which is the two registries. Oh, sorry, Kathy, you've got your hand up.
Sorry, David, I was trying to take it down. Please continue.
Oh, no problem. So Kurt has made the comment, I don't quite understand this question. Are you asking how many SMD files are required to block one name in all the donuts PLDs? I think we should sharpen it a bit. So that's something that staff can do, prepare a revised draft of that question to focus more closely. Are there any other questions, proposed questions in relation to the questions for the registries? Vaibhav, you've got your hand up.
Yep. Just a small question. I think Christine had a very valid question 5 minutes back. This is Vaibhav Agarwal for the record. What other services? Okay, DPML is just. I think I've been trying to look this around, and see there are a lot of government organizations which are triggering trademark registrations in the regional aspect. So just to give us all an idea, and we can then take a call whether we want to, you know, look at this or not. Now there is USPTO, which is right in front of all of us, which does electronic processing of all the trademarks, to be precise. And then there is Australian IP Commission, which does it, and so on. Do they actually trigger TMCH in any way, or can they help by connecting to TMCH, and shouldn't that be an easier approach to the entire process, since TMCH is already automated? Yeah. Thanks.
Thank you for that comment. Sorry, I was just for a slight delay there, I was trying to capture the questions that were coming up in the chat.
Sure.
Noting from both Kurt's comment and from Jeff suggesting it might be useful to take a little bit more time to finesse or with some of these questions, we've already had some suggestions from Kurt, which staff will take away and work on. Jeff, are there any particular suggestions that you want to make at this stage, or any of the other working group members of specific questions you would like to see finessed or redrafted? Jeff,
this is Jeff, David. Yeah, I understand Kurt's question. I also understand what the question is trying to ask, so I think that's just kind of a wordsmithing thing. A question for the, and I can't remember, maybe you guys can help me with this. I know we got the overall numbers for Sunrise registrations, but do we get them broken down by registry? I know that the registries were, you know, when fees for Sunrise were brought up at one point, and people were complaining about the high costs of Sunrise and that it didn't reduce the cost, registries were saying, yeah, but we had to pay the TMCH $25,000 in order to do this. And if you look at the amount of Sunrise registrations we had, it didn't, you know, it didn't come anywhere near making back the cost. So it would be great to get a breakdown of the number of Sunrise registrations by registry.
Hi, can I just leap in? It's Susan. I don't think at the moment we've got that breakdown, but that that link to the CCPRT page that I put in the chat a bit earlier does seem to have that information up to December 2015 that they've gathered, I think. So it has. Yeah. So, like, you know, it goes, you know, starts at Academy and says, you know, 265 Sunrise registrations, accountants 51, et cetera, et cetera. So I think that data is in there.
Thanks, Susan. This is Jeff. I think that's great data. We should capture that.
Yeah, definitely.
We should probably ask the CCTRT where they got the data from to make sure that we're copying accurate data or the know the source of that data. But, yeah, that's great data for us to have, too.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm not sure. Would require a bit more reading to work out where they got it from, I think. It says source trademark database records. I don't know. Is that the TMCH? Not sure.
Thanks, Susan. So returning then to the, and I've tried to capture that in the questions at the side, and also note that staff will add a link to the CCTRT data to the working group reading list. Make sure that that gets through. So returning to the questions, now I think we're down to the questions for the TMCH providers. There were no comments from Kurt on that. Do we have any comments from anyone else at this stage? And I'm just noticing Kathy's comment in the chat. Okay, so there not being any comments on that section, we'll perhaps move on to the points which are raised below, which are from the working group and charter discussions. Again, we don't seem to receive any comments on those. And moving on, we added, following the discussions last week, additional questions for the CCTRT and also for the analysis group. And as you'll also see, we added some additional ongoing work that staff will do to keep the data updated as and when it's received. And this perhaps relates to perhaps a good time to, just as we reach the top of the hour, discuss item 3 on the agenda, which is staff update on further data extraction. We've continued to progress this with our colleagues who work directly with the TNCH providers, and we're in the process of hopefully getting access to the most up-to-date data, and we'll continue to, as and when that is available, which we're hoping will be in the next 2 to 3 weeks, we'll continue to update the tabular document which we displayed previously and incorporate any new data that becomes available. So staff have continued to progress that, and we hope that within the next few weeks we'll be able to make a substantive update to the document we've already produced. So at that point, are there any other comments on the document or the questions to and identified data that we want to seek over the next few weeks? Okay, as nobody's put their hand up or raised any other comments, then I think this is probably an apt time to bring the meeting to a close. It's been bang on 1600 UTC. Staff will prepare an updated copy of this document, taking into account the comments that we've received so far, and will hopefully provide... Oh, sorry. I'll hold up there. There's some comments coming through in the chat.
Hi, sorry. Do you guys know about this? This is Vaibhav for the record. These guys publish an international trademark repository of all the trademarks that gets registered. It's like a catalog. So every time you want to register a trademark, you could actually go to them and check. I mean, they're a private body, but this would be interesting to study.
Staff would be, we can add this to the reading list to be tracked through as well by the working group. So just before we close out the meeting, just to note that staff will prepare a revised list of these, of the action items, suggestions and questions arising from the various sub-team calls, updating it on the basis of the comments we've received from Kurt and from those of you from today. Additionally, we'll also circulate the list of proposed questions for what we're now calling private protected marks list providers. We'll circulate that for the working group, for the sub-team to discuss further over the coming week, and that could be added as a new section ultimately to the sort of master actions, items, suggestions and questions document. Okay, if there are no further questions, then I'd like to thank you all for joining us this afternoon and wish you a pleasant weekend.
Thanks, David.
And apologies, just to confirm, the call is taking place next Friday at the same time. Next call is next Friday at the same time.
Thank you. Again, the meeting has been adjourned. Operator, please stop the recordings and disconnect all remaining lines. Have a great Friday, everyone, and great weekend.